just him. But he's the one who's ascribed the first discovery, first description of it. And basically, what the Bose particle is, it's not, I mean, you call it a particle, they call it a particle, but it really is, I like to think of it more like a disturbance in space.
It brings to mind a little object that could fit in the palm of your hand somehow, but it's not a solid thing. It's what is it? What's it made of?
Well, yeah, they don't know.
Okay.
They don't know what it's made of. But here's how I would describe it after doing some reading on this and thinking about it. If you think of it as a kind of a depression in space around the other atomic particles, and that the amount of depression is the amount of mass a particle has, then the Higgs boson is this depression in space. And let me make an analogy between let's say you put a rubber drum head over a drum.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you pushed your finger down in the middle of the drum and then took a marble, before you push your finger, if you take a marble and just roll a marble across the drum, it's going to go pretty much straight as you roll the marble.
Mm-hmm.
But now if you push your finger in the middle of the drum head is distorted, and as you roll the marble is going to be more inclined to come to your finger.
Uh-huh.
Now, this is actually the theory behind general relativity as a massive distortion of space describing gravity, which Einstein kind of predicted with his mathematics. And on a macro, very macro scale, that's been proven to be an excellent description of how space is distorted. And for years and years, scientists were figuring out, is space made of something or is it not made of something? Is it void or is there something there? Well, after this argument going back and forth, and Einstein was trying to solve this puzzle, and he was of the opinion that there's something to space. It's not just void. They finally concluded, well, yes, something must be in space. So, my description on a macro scale, which is, like I said, equivalent to this concept of gravity and gravity fields and all this other stuff, Higgs said, well, there must be something similar on a subatomic level that is distorting the microspace around a subatomic particle. Now, the problem that you run into when you get into microspace is that space is actually quantized. That is, it's not continuous, but it's broken up into discrete little parts. And so everything is quantized. So things, a nice picture for that doesn't really kind of come to mind, because it's hard to think of space being quantized unless, you have a piece of linen, for example, that is woven in two directions, and you can say, well, the piece of linen is quantized because it's not, completely continuous.
Well, maybe, and correct me if I'm wrong, but an allegory for this seems to me to be like computers, digitized. It's full of ones and zeros that appear in different lengths and patterns to form different things. But all common to computer information are ones and zeros, ons and offs.
Yeah. Hmm. Yes. And I mean the the distances between those is very, very small.
Mm-hmm.
When you're talking about space, but still it appears to be quantized. So, but Higgs kind of described that, okay, we have this kind of distortion in space, which we'll call the Higgs field. And so this particle interacts with the other particles to give them mass. So without the Higgs boson, then they hypothesized, then nothing would have mass. And if nothing has mass, then there's nothing to hold the particles together. And you wouldn't have things as protons and neutrons. And certainly you wouldn't have protons and neutrons in the same place to form the nucleus of an atom. And if you don't have the nucleus of an atom, you don't have atoms. And so you don't have anything. So the importance of the Higgs is that, well, gee, if we can find this particle that supposedly gives mass to other particles, then we think that we can understand how this whole atomic and subatomic world is put together.
Now, just a couple of weeks ago, you were describing God as the glue that holds together the universe, that countervails that energy, that the tendency of everything to fly apart naturally, without some sort of controlling force. So I kind of get the idea of the nickname here, God Particle. This was predicted mathematically then, correct?
Yes. One way of doing science is to say, gee, I've got this picture of how things may be, and model that kind of describes this picture that I've got in my mind. And out of that, certain fudge facts, if you will, kind of, and this is kind of one of them. You know, if indeed there is this distortion, micro distortion in space, which we'll call the Higgs field, then there must be a particle that interacts with the other particles to give them mass. And a Higgs boson, a proton is classified as a boson as well. I mean, not a proton, a photon.
Okay.
So a photon interacts with electrons. So to give, when an electron gives off energy, it gives off its energy as a photon. And a photon is, it's...
Yeah, I think you're losing me on what a photon is, though. Is it energy or is it matter?
Well, it has no rest mass. But it can interact with matter. So it interacts with electrons, and it's a carrier, if you will, a carrier of energy between electrons, really is what it is.
Okay.
It happens that, you know, we can see the result of photons because, you know, we turn on a light switch. Electrons in the molecules that electricity is going through gets excited, and they give off light, and then we can see in the room because those photons then hit our eyes and change chemicals in our eyes, in our retinas. So. A Higgs boson is kind of like the same thing. It's a transference of energy, kind of between particles, but in this case, it's a transference of mass, between one particle and the next.
Should we think of it as a catalyst? Something similar to that?
No, more like a conduit, I think, would be, you know, kind of a better description of it.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, you know, these are all kind of mathematical, you know, constructs, because even let's take the simplest boson, which is the photon. It appears to be simple, but things get really strange in the quantum world when you get down to the quantum level, because a photon is described as having a wave characteristic and a particle characteristic.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it has a wave characteristic when you don't look at it, mm-hmm. but as soon as you try to observe it, it has a particle characteristic. So. You know, it's like a tennis ball hitting against the wall. But if you don't look at it, it's like a wave going through, a slit, and it produces wave interference patterns. So it's, you know, things get very strange when you get down to the subatomic, you know, particle air level and trying to describe on a quantum level, all these particles interacting and how things are put together.
it makes me think that maybe as a receiver of information or of photons or any, your conclusions get filtered somehow, but somehow the nature of the result itself depends upon the nature of the receptors, you know, whether it's visual or audio. Somehow by receiving information, we in fact define the information we received. Does that make sense to you?
In essence, if, for example, you know, this what I just described about the photon, mm-hmm. If this is true about you know, all the subatomic particles, that they actually particles, but they behave as waves when you don't look at them, then everything would be waves. And if we go back to what you know, what I originally said, you know, several months ago now, mm-hmm. that if God did indeed speak everything into existence, which of course I believe,
mm-hmm.
Then everything should be waves. Everything should be the very voice of God, which is, you know, a disturbance in this space-time continuum that we live in.
Mm-hmm.
So the physical world is nothing but, you know, nothing but waves. And there's another branch of subatomic particles called string theory, and which some string theories describe how an electron is made. And the electron's made up of three strings, kind of rotating, vibrating donuts, if you will, rotating about each other. Not everybody ascribes to the string theory, but it actually is a better picture of God speaking into space and creating the physical world that we live in. Now, another interesting thing is if these particles normally would act like waves, unless someone or something is looking at them. If God, then the concept is that if God took his eyes off our universe, we would just disintegrate into a bunch of waves and not be, there would be no particles around at all.
This is fascinating stuff. David, are you still there? Are you with us?
Dome. Oh, yeah. The back in the ancient days when I was in California and joined Science of Mind Church for a short time, for a couple of years, one of the things that we used to talk about a great deal was quantum physics, and specifically the notion that there were certain particles that acted differently if you looked at them or didn't look at them, or if you went looking for something, then it disappeared or didn't disappear. And it, you know, the rules change depending upon what particle you were looking for. And, you know, and to our minds at the time, and to my mind still somewhat, it blends into the idea that we are spiritual beings having a short human respite, and then at the end of the respite, we're going to be back into being spiritual beings.
Kind of back to reality, back to basics.
Yeah, and so... So, you know, our perception then, and you know, much of my perception now is that when this body is done with, I'll become quantum physics again, or spiritual matter. So, it's always been a fascinating topic. I've always been confused by it, but in particularly when somebody postulates the mathematical model and this is this and that's that. I guess one of the things that I'm interested in is, and I haven't read the book yet, The God Particle, and I don't know if I'll get to it. I think I'm still working on the one that you gave me last month, Jim, or was it last year? I forget now.
It's a slow book. Slow read, yeah.
I'm bogged. Something about fire and guns and stuff. But yeah. But anyway, what I'm curious about is are there people out there that are saying, so what? Are there people that are changing their lives according to this particular new theory or new demonstration of this theory? Or does this kind of just cement the beliefs of those who are strong believers in God versus those who are not?
Well, that's an interesting point, because some would say, well, you know, if the standard model is more accurate than any other subatomic particle model, then the discovery of the Higgs boson is important. Now, I should step back a little bit, because they actually didn't discover the particle.
Hmm.
What they discovered was, when you smash protons together at very high energies, energies equivalent, or, well, actually not equivalent, but higher than the mass, the supposed mass of the Higgs boson, and then you look at the particles that are generated from that, there is some... And in very few, I mean, in rare instances, they've found, if you will, kind of patterns or trails of these particles flying off from this center collision that behave according to the mathematical model described about a Higgs boson. So they actually can see the particle, but they saw what looks like the results. If the particle was there, then these other particles that get generated should behave like this. So it's a different, it's a little different twist. I mean, it's like we can't see the particle because it's got such a short half-life that it's not around, and we can't actually physically see it, but we look for the effects.
Elusive. I'm looking at the article and the comments by the director general of the research institute, the CERN collider, the Hadron Collider. And to quote him, he says, "The discovery of a particle consistent with the Higgs boson opens the way to more detailed studies requiring larger statistics, which will pin down the new particle's properties, and it's likely to shed light on other mysteries of our universe." And he describes this this discovery as a convergent near certainty on the existence of the new particle, but not a discovery in itself. So, yeah, that's exactly what he said.
Yep. So, go ahead, Don.
The importance of Higgs boson, then, was in some people's minds, in some theoretical physicists' minds, is that, oh, well, you know, this this had to exist at the singularity point of the Big Bang. So they're going back to the Big Bang. And so if it had to exist back then this helps to explain, this gives more credence to the Big Bang theory. That's a bunch of hogwash. It's a bunch of baloney.
Mm-hmm.
All it states is, well, maybe, you know, maybe space and matter behave like this, but it doesn't say anything about the start of the physical world as we know it. And so we as Christians shouldn't step back and say, oh, wow, maybe all this stuff started by itself. I mean, that is a totally fallacious, you know, conclusion based on the discovery of an existence of perhaps the boson, the Higgs boson.
Now, here's the other thing that puzzles me about what you just said, and this whole story. How is it from a non-believer's logical mind, and perhaps those are mutually exclusive terms, but how does the logic work out from their point of view? That because they now can see trails of the boson, that would suggest, or that gives credence to the Big Bang theory. That's the part that I'm missing, because it would seem to me that you would want to find something that would explode, would blow apart, would crash and burn, as opposed to something that seems to be holding things together.
Well, yeah, that's the reason that they come to this conclusion is that while this particle existed at the very beginning moments of the Big Bang, and because of its existence, matter actually took on mass, and we have such things as the hydrogen atom and all the other atoms that we see today. But it only existed when energies were so high that allowed for its existence, because it is the calculated to be the heaviest, or the massive, that's a word, particle in the in the Standard Model, for example.
There's still assumptions underlying that whole Big Bang thing that seemed to me to be, and if you can predict all this mathematically, it's as if the science has come to the conclusion that there's something there. And the humanist in us is saying, well, it's got to be something, but it can't be God. And the believers are saying, there is something, and it's got to be God. It's almost right. Like we're zeroing in on the issue here. And maybe this near certainty, this convergent near certainty, just short of a discovery, points us all in that direction. I feel that, but then I guess I'm kind of biased.
Well, in my mind, I mean, it doesn't bother me one bit that, okay, maybe the Higgs boson is a good description of subatomic space, if you will. There is this field or this distortion, the distortion of space. I look at it as just, okay, this is just a further description of space. Because if we go with a model that says, okay, God created space time first, created the stuff that he was going to speak into first, mm-hmm. It has all these properties which are dimensional. It's more than time. It's, it's maybe has 10 dimensions or so. In the 10 dimensions, each dimension brings on a specific characteristic. And part of the characteristic is mass. And so if space itself has the ability of having mass, which we know that the Father, thought, how is all of the physical matter to be held together, then he would have created a space-time continuum that was... Perfectly.
Don, I think we're breaking up so badly here now. We're losing your audio. So,
I'm sorry.
Yeah, well, don't apologize. It's not your fault. Other than maybe Texas internet. I don't know. Maybe it's the heat. At any rate, this has been a wonderful discussion, and because of the technical problems, I think we're gonna wrap it up here. But the Higgs boson and the God particle, to me, it all points to what we've been talking about every Monday with you here, that God started it all. And I hope that this discovery and discussion of it kind of brings us to that conclusion. I think it points that way. It certainly does in my mind, at least. And David, I sense that it does for you as well. And Don, thank you very much for giving us the explanation today, enlightening us, and we'll look forward to another conversation with you next Monday. Don is a biochemist and a member of the board at creationmoments.com. I would invite you to take a look at their website, creationmoments.com. It's a marvelous resource. They've got materials for you to use at church or in your Bible studies, your own personal studies. It's a great help in understanding God's creation. Also, in equipping you to understand and to shed some light on those who would argue otherwise. It gives you some ammunition to use, and I hope you'll trust it as a good resource for you, creationmoments.com. Once again, you can link to it from our website at brokenroadradio.com. Don, be blessed. Thanks very much for joining us this morning. Appreciate it. Music now from Michael W. Smith. Good morning to you.